It's 4:45 over here, Buffalo time. Do you want to fucking do a roulette
instead of a rotation? Let's do a roulette.
It's almost like it's like a, it's like
show within the show.
Yeah, show within the show. It's like almost like a second. It's a split personality.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a good choice.
Yes.
The terror that is Risk Roulette. Behold the terror that is Risk Roulette.
Welcome back to So Far, So Pod, So What, the transatlantic state-of-the-art speed metal podcast. I am Greg.
I am Jonathan.
And we are here for another
for the transatlantic rousing Risk Roulette.
Yes, another rousing edition of your favorite Megadeth record, Centric. can't even get through a sentence without laughing.
In the first iteration of this, I said that I hadn't found any real apologies, but I found one now. Actually, don't recall his handle on Twitter, but I recall one Big Risk fan that really liked it and also commented that he only wanted to strangle us once or twice in the episode, which was good. Or choke us to death, something like that. As much respect anyway, you know.
I think, yeah, believe it or not, I believe he actually lives in Buffalo, and I've never met him before. I think his name is Subsequent Seer on Twitter. But yes, he did inform us that he only wanted to strangle us once, or maybe a couple times during the prior edition of Risk Roulette.
Maximum but, three times.
Yes, maximum. Yeah, he only wanted to murder us three times, which is, you know, if you think about it, that's almost not even murder.
well.
But yes, here we are covering track by track your favorite Megadeth record, Risk. We did get some feedback via email
on Risk Roulette.
Yeah, we got an email from Alex, who is in England, and this is what was written. Hi guys, it's Alex from England here. Just listen to the this was sent post our first episode of Risk Roulette. Just listen to the Risk Roulette episode, and I've got to say, I think it's the best way to approach the album. I guess we all know it's kind of a stinker. Yes, very well put. But there are a couple decent tracks, also well put. And that way, it reminds me of Virtual 11 in a way. So that's another good comparison. I listened to Metal Up Your Podcast, do a listen through, and they destroyed it.
I've heard a couple of souls by them too.
Yeah, which is fair. It was also said, thank God, sarcastic. I'm presuming this is sarcastically written. Thank God Metallica doesn't have any clunker albums, right? Anyway, really enjoy the show. Keep it up. All the best, Alex, Maidstone, England. Actually, well, I will read my response to Alex. howdy again. Yeah, neither myself or John had any particular desire to address Risk in any full album analysis styled episode. Also, and possibly more importantly, I don't think we were confident in the desire of you lovely people to listen to us giggle like assholes, possibly while intoxicated and sleep deprived. Had some of the shit on this album for an entire episode. Luckily, John came up with a way for us to giggle like assholes, possibly while intoxicated and sleep deprived. It's some of the shit on this album for multiple episodes now. Looks like the joke's on all of us.
Exactly. We like doing that.
Here we are. Here we go. UFO.
Insomnia Yankee.
Oh no.
Oh, rough one. I can tell you now. Yeah. I did a test spin because I forgot which wheel I used last time, so I made a new one with a new service. I made a test spin. It was a track I much rather would have done, but that was indeed the test spin. The real spin, the arrow points at Insomnia. Yeah. Oh yeah, clearly not one of my favorites. I will elaborate as we listen, but how do you feel coming into this one?
There's worse songs on this record. That's not really much of a, I mean, that's not really complimentary though, I guess, you know, to say this is the, I don't know.
Okay, here goes nothing. Here goes nothing.
Actually, I think you've pulled up the 2004 version. The original version has a much longer intro.
Ah, should we perhaps listen to that?
I think maybe we should pull up the original because that's, yeah.
Here we go.
Totally different vibe.
Okay. this riff could be kind of cool, kind of Sales of Charon, but I don't like the tail. I don't like it. Because it could be like an Alice in Chains Dirt type riff, but that end is just too boxy.
Well, it's got too much exuberance to it to be Alice in Chains. It's not dirgy or slow or depressing enough.
Kind of industrial tint in the drum production.
Yeah.
Even the harsh part had that. And obviously here, a loop.
Yeah. Forgot about that part.
Some kind of violin.
Yeah.
Actually, I like that instrument.
No, it's not bad. It's not bad.
I can't sleep.
it brings, honestly, I listen to this song and it brings back a lot of memories. I remember when I bought Risk, it might have been, maybe not the day it came out, but it was maybe, I think, that weekend. Back then in America, records used to come out on Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
Every Tuesday was new record day.
Interesting.
And I think now it's Fridays, which probably makes more sense. But I think I bought it the weekend after. I remember put it in the CD player after I bought it from the mall. And I was like, it's one of those things where you listen to it and you're trying to convince yourself. This is like, oh yeah, hell yeah, man. This is good shit. And I still feel like that when I hear this song. I still feel like I'm convincing myself that I like this, although I'm not really sure that I do.
I recognize this feeling, and also then I think I would have had an easier time just accepting all these production tricks. It wasn't as weird to do this. I mean, it was a weird time for rock. This song, it has that dynamic of going up and down with these electronic loop type things, and where they drop out kind of, and then they drop into that power groove or whatever you want to call that. I think it actually works way better in this version than the one I have been listening to.
Again, the 2004s, as I call them, they're fucking abominations.
You know? Yeah.
Like they're just
We'll have to get into that at some point.
Yeah, at some point, yeah, we're gonna probably have an episode just dedicated to the 2004s, and we're gonna need a whole bunch of toilet paper because we're gonna shit all over them. Or at least I am. I don't want to speak for you, but I know that I myself will be shitting all over them.
And you're not alone at all with that.
Yeah.
So the violin must also be way more prominent in this mix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And dry, more dry as well. So it really sticks out, which is kind of cool, to be honest.
Yes.
I can't say I don't like it.
I mean, it's amazing how you could take a record that so many people don't like already and somehow find a way to make it worse by remixing and remastering it. You know, like, I mean...
Like I said, first thing, like it more than the remake. Maybe, actually, the production works better for me here, but it's completely overproduced. Let's just say that right off the bat. Like, it's that sound of trying too hard in the mixing. Like, just like, come on, listen to Martin Birch, Heaven and Hell. Like, is he trying that hard? Well, he's at the peak of his effort for sure, but he's not trying to be something. He's Martin Birch. He's with Dio. He's been with Dio before. Iommi is in there playing fat riffs. You know, he's just doing it basically. Uh-huh. And I don't know who produced this actually.
Oh, it's Dan Huff, who also had he'd also done Cryptic Writings.
Okay.
So they were kind of going for a repeat performance. I feel like, you know, hang on. Let me double check that. I'm pretty sure it is Dan Huff because I think that they did go back to him just because of how great Cryptic Writings was.
A great sounding
record.
How
successful it was. I mean, it's a platinum record and yeah. So let's see. Yeah, produced Dan Huff and Dave Mustaine.
That makes sense. I can hear that. I think that maybe Cryptic Writings is just him being him, like I said about Birch, because it doesn't give a sound of pretension sonically. This one does.
Right.
Sometimes that's the fun with Risk, this pretentious audio landscape that they built.
Yeah.
And I think it bothered me a tad more in Prince of Darkness. Production bothered me more in that one, kind of, because it felt like there was a lot of little guitars, like, you can listen to me during the episode and I'm explaining why it's so hard to digest that sound, because it's too much topping, you know. Like, just give me mustard on. Like, don't give me all this, like, 15 kinds of sauce. Like, there's chipotle, there's mustard, and there's the garlic sauce, and that's what I feel about the production on Risk a bit. And maybe less so this track now. I mean, maybe I'm in a good mood. We've been recording for a bit and it's been fun. Yeah. So maybe it's that. But for the first time ever, I enjoyed it a bit, I have to say.
No, I will definitely say that.
Put on your clogs and dance.
Let's dance.
Let's dance.
I will say that analyzing these songs in a podcast format has definitely made them more enjoyable, because I don't know if it's because they're actually better. It's just more shared suffering is more fun than suffering silently by themselves.
Funny thing that happened with Prince of Darkness was when I edited it, I was like a little bit, I was actually a bit grossed out by the track when I edited. I actually muted myself at many times when I said positive things because I couldn't stand for that. As I was editing. So it's mostly Greg in that episode, but Greg did a great job with it. So you didn't need me saying something I no longer believed in a week later, which was that it was a good track. I kind of prefer this now to that. But that's now. Let's see what I think when I edit this.
Yeah, right.
So here I am, John from the future. Post-production, John. Getting back to you on what I think about Insomnia now, as I'm editing it. Judging the original mix here, of course. And man, actually, I like it even more. I'm starting to enjoy this track for real. Weird.
Is this a song I would ever want to see them play live ever again? No.
Oh, God, no.
Not a chance. But I mean, if in, I don't know, it's easy. It's really easy to, it's really easy to shit on this stuff. Like again, I always go back to the example. It's always easier to kick upwards. You know, right. that's a great line.
Easier to get away with anyway.
Yeah. It's easier to get away with. So it's really, really easy to just kind of blindly, you know, just shit all over this album and the songs they're in. But like from a perspective of putting an album together, it's probably a good first song. It is upbeat. You know, it does kind of, you know, it's I'm
way
a big
better
fan
than Junkie.
Of, 100%.
I
will listen to this song way. Yes.
10
if
times
I had to choose.
For one Junkie.
Yes.
Like I'm probably going to refrain from listening to Junkie ever again. I think it was enough when we did this, when we did our episodes on the new album. But yeah, Insomnia, this version, yes. I might play it again. It might happen.
It'll get a spin. Again, from an album perspective, an up-tempo opener is never a bad idea. You know, unless maybe you're like a stoner or a doom metal band, you know. You know, but for a band like this, especially coming on an album
for a stoner doom metal band, just open with a quick one anyway.
I would love that.
Like a fast minute. I listened to Far Beyond Driven today. It starts with a very fast minute and then.
That's
so heavy.
Yes.
Because you've been in the can't stop it, no family life, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
before, so.
Exactly. Take back what I said. Stoner and or doom bands, open your records with the fast track, at least for the first minute or two.
That's why High on Fire is pretty good, but I'm quoting Greg, but I don't disagree. Sleep sucks. This is a pretty shit band.
You know, there's a lot of homaging that exists within the metal scene, which I'm totally fine with. You know, obviously I'm guilty of it to certain degrees. I'm sure you are as well. But there's, as far as Sleep is concerned, I never ever got the appeal of it. I don't understand what made it so unique that you could get something from them that you couldn't get from like Volume 4, you know, or like old Sabbath. I just have no interest. But I mean, you know, whether I like them or not is irrelevant, because obviously they are important. You know, somehow they are important to the scene.
I know so many big fans as well.
Yeah. People were so excited when they reformed and they started doing stuff again. So, I mean, like, I can't hate on it, because obviously once, you know, and they are an underground band. So as, you know, champions of the underground we are, we do have to, you know, at least respect it.
Cool guy.
Yeah, he seems like a cool... I mean, he fucking...
I love his description on what heavy metal is. I've used it in podcasts before, but it's too good to not reuse when he's asked, like, what's heavy? And he's like, yeah, what's heavy? Heavy is being about... Yeah, well, you're pissed off. It's about being pissed off and being a warlord. And you're, like, in the battle with an axe. And you hit it. You know, you hit the guy's head. And it landed. And then you make a riff that plays the same way that way. That's heavy.
That's what he said?
Yeah.
Heavy's about being pissed off and being a warlord and laying down, like, just like someone like that was in battle, just if they had an axe and just chop somebody in the head and it landed and you have a riff that plays the same way that way, that's heavy.
I you know what, dude, you hear shit like that, and that's fucking awesome. Matt Pike, I mean, he's obviously a lifer. He's an awesome, he's a true, there's really nothing about him that drips of insincerity.
Right.
You know?
That's
a phrase I've said before too, but he seems very, very earnest and very sincere about being Matt Pike. Sit in the evil eye, stand on ground. Even though I don't like sleep at all, I'm reticent to kind of shit on it too hard because yeah. Matt Pike's in it, and even I'm not even a huge High on Fire fan, but Matt Pike is a legit dude.
Yeah,
and I watched this guy. I mean, what's not to love about him? I watched him win a Grammy in America.
Yeah,
like
with
Matt,
a cane.
Matt Pike. He got his toe amputated, yeah, and then walked with a cane down the red carpet of an American mainstream award ceremony and won.
Yeah.
Like, what's? I mean, he's one of us, and so you gotta love and respect that, you know.
I would say I'm actually maybe not big or huge fan, but I'm definitely a major fan of High on Fire. For me, it was all that I needed and none of that sleep stuff, sleepy shit. Like, listen to this bit, for example.
High on Fire is so much better than Sleep.
I like them a lot. They're good live. Yeah. Seen them live a few times. Kind of sounds like you're pissed off and you're being a warlord. And
yeah.
And then you wrote a riff that sounded the same way that way.
What song is this?
Blessed Black Wings.
Blessed Black Wings? Okay. That's cool. I like that. Also, I seem to remember when do you remember when Megadeth or Mustaine was doing that Gigantour thing, like maybe 10 or 15 years ago?
I do.
I think I don't remember how many they did. I think they did at least two. It was either the second or maybe the third one, if there was one. But I remember High on Fire was on one of the editions of that tour.
That's,
and I remember I seem to remember some interview that happened in a magazine over here with Mustaine. I think it involved Mustaine, Matt Pike, Alexi from Children of Bodom, because they were on that tour, and maybe one or maybe someone else or one other person, one or two other people. And I remember at one point the interview kind of broke down to them talking about like vinyl records. This predates the vinyl resurgence or whatever, and it just
old enough for wave one though. So
oh yeah, absolutely. And I remember at one point the conversation broke down just to just being involving Mustaine and Matt Pike talking about how great gatefold vinyl was for rolling joints when they were kids or when they, and I thought it was funny that like Matt Pike was like this leveler of just like how like he's just this dude who just doesn't give a fuck, and he's Matt Pike and he does what he does and he is who he is and that's all he is, and here he is just leveling Mustaine down to just being this Hesher stoner teenage kid again talking about using gatefold vinyl to roll joints. Like I saw that's the kind of guy Matt Pike is. He's the leveler. He'll bring anyone back down to just being back down to earth, you know? So I thought that was pretty cool.
That sounds completely legit. That's the Matt Pike I know.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to do with the whole sleep side topic now is I'm going to say, sleep, that's boring. Let's have some insomnia.
That's right. That does make sense. Oh my God. That's pretty funny how we kind of derailed into a sleep conversation when we're analyzing insomnia. Sleep, the cure to insomnia.
Yeah, I think I've said most things on it. It's still, you know, a song that now went from a song that I actually kind of despised to I kind of applaud the effort in it now that I hear it. I like that little violin. It was like, sort of grew on me as the track played. I don't like the industrial drum thing that they do. I don't think they would have needed to. The song also has a rhythm that reminds me of 90s drum and bass, like which was, you know, that was the drum beat of the 90s. You have Smells Like Teen Spirit has that too, slower variation. And we call it sauna funk here. In
what do you call it?
Sauna funk. Like
sauna funk?
Yeah, I love saunas, but I don't like the sauna funk. No idea why we call it that, but like a very noob rhythm on a drum kit.
Sure. Yeah,
most guys can play that. And this
sauna
is,
funk.
And when it's faster, it sounds like drum and bass. And this, I guess, is somewhere in the middle of that. But yeah, Greg, take it home on Insomnia. What is it? Is it a good track? Is it a good opener? Is it in the top half of Risk or bottom half?
I mean, I guess, again, in the spirit of just analyzing it from record-making perspective, I would say it's an effective opener because it is up-tempo. But I guess it's in the upper half of Risk, I guess.
Maybe barely.
I bet that by the time we're all done with analyzing this record and these songs, that what I thought would have been a good six-song EP, I'm thinking by the time we're done, this might be whittled down to like a four or five-song EP.
That's where I've been, you know, and let's see if it changes. Now I've actually listened to the album a few times, but never in its entirety, actually. I tend to split it up. So, and I mean, yeah. I enjoy the roulette. I think it's a nice way to approach it. So I'm actually looking forward to all of those. There's always a nice thing we can throw in as well.
Absolutely. I agree.
Behold the terror that was Risk Roulette.
Risk Roulette.
Behold the terror that is Risk Roulette.